The Guardian.
Before you get started with this edition of Football Weekly, we want to point you in the direction of our sponsor, Squarespace. For everything you need to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/guardian to get 10% off your first purchase. And now, on with the show.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. James Richardson is still in Botswana and might not even be back next Monday. Dave Farrar's in prison. So it's me, Max Rushton, here to upset the comments section with more lowbrow observations on the world of football. Today, a roundup of football results since Monday, including Diego Costa shouldn't have been on the pitch anyway. Aguero can't take a penalty. Two own goals and a red card for one man in the Championship and some Olympics. And we'll look ahead to week two of the best league in the world, the Premier League, in what can only be described as a not particularly fascinating set of fixtures. And we'll preview the start of all those foreign leagues people like to talk about here. Let's say happy A-level results day to our panel. Nick Miller, what did you get?
I don't want to brag. Two A's and a C.
James Horncastle, how did you get one? What are you going to do now with your life?
Would you like me to jump up in the air with my results?
If you could, yeah. James Horncastle, what did you get? Two A's and a C for Nick.
I just improved on that. Okay. I got two A's and a B.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Paolo Baldini.
Well, I cheated a little bit.
Did you do a baccalaureate?
I got three A's, but one of them was in Italian.
That is cheating, isn't it?
Were you allowed to do that?
There's no one stopping you from doing that.
Oh, my God.
You know, there's really no rules against it. I did also do a French AS just to feel a bit better about myself.
Oh, how did you get on in that?
Also an A.
Oh, dear me. I asked this because on this day... celebrities like to go, hey guys, I got a U and my life's great. Yeah. You know, sort of badge of honour, going, look, no one ever has to go to school. So look, you're all geeks in here, which is excellent to know. Should we talk about football?
Yeah, of course.
Producer Ben says, four A's and a D. But does include general studies that we had to do because the league tables became like cumulative for UCAS points. So if everyone did general studies at the school, they did better. And general studies was just doing a crossword. And further maths was just beyond me.
Some of those crosswords are quite difficult though.
So. It wasn't even a cryptic. It was like the Monday quick in a G2, which is always easier than the speedy one in the Observer, which normally takes me about 6 hours. Right, let's start with some football that happened on Monday because we previewed it briefly on Monday. Chelsea 2, West Ham 1. James, what did you make of Conte's first game?
Well, I mean, he got the win, which I think is the most important thing for him. During his time at Juventus, he was able to keep that team competitive in his first year, even though it probably took him maybe 7 or 8 games to find his best team and his best starting 11. Yeah, I thought Hazard was probably the standout player for them in that game. He looked so much sharper than everyone else, even though once they got in front and he got the goal, he did seem to take the piss a bit and was a little bit arrogant sometimes, just was walking around and strutting. But aside from that, you know, I thought, again, we could look at, before Costa's winner, I was like, how is he still on the pitch for that challenge on Adrian? And I just didn't really see a future for him at Chelsea because I just thought he was so much of a liability in some of what he was going about and doing. It just doesn't seem to be a reformed character whatsoever.
Such a potty mouth start from James. One rude word already. I think you're allowed one.
Yeah, okay.
But no more.
It's my Costa booking.
That was, yeah, how is James Horncastle still on the pod? How was Costa still on the pitch?
Well, to begin with, he got booked for dissent. You know, it was classic Costa sort of punching the ground when a decision didn't go his way. And then he did chase down a back pass, I think, to Adrian, which he was entitled to go for, but he just ended up raking his foot down Adrian's shin, which just was a straight red card. And then, of course, got the winner. And it was a glorious winner. And Conte, again... to answer your first question about what to make of that first game, he changed it. He made some quite big decisions. He took off Hazard, who many people were perplexed at the time because he looked the liveliest and the more likely to score. And Conte went 2 up front, and it was Batshuayi who nodded the ball down for Costa. And 2-1.
And a marvellous celebration from made Klopp look sort of quite tame compared to, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, it was... It's what we've come to expect from Conte, or particularly the Conte we saw at the Euros when You know, he got a bloody cheek at one stage for celebrating wildly with his players when they beat Belgium, and then jumped on top of the dugout after another goal. And I think he's quite clever. I think he realizes perhaps that, you know, when he got the Juventus job, he was a former captain and was already well loved and a legend at that club. And this, I think, he's just trying to form a bond with the fans, and that was the first step towards doing that. You know, he said, "I was very emotional to see an Italian flag in the stands, very very proud," and yeah, I just think it's quite smart of him.
Does anyone disapprove of a celebrating manager?
No, I mean, I think first of all, this is Conte. I mean, if you don't want this, you wouldn't hire him, because he's always been like this. He's always been very emotional. But I also think that somewhere like Chelsea, it almost feels more necessary, because they've had such a big personality of manager there, that if you don't want to get lost in it, if you want to make yourself the new guy and make yourself the guy that the fans are going to identify with, that's sort of what you do. You've had the holdover period with Hiddink, who's a bit more restrained, but yeah, let Conte be Conte.
Jurgen Klopp disapproves of a over-celebrating manager. He apologised
for the piggyback.
For the piggyback, yeah, he said he that was Liverpool's fourth goal, I think, and he said when he celebrated like that, it made it look like he thought the game was completely over. So he said, "I made a mistake, so I'm sorry about that." I mean, you know, they still won, so
that's fine. Chelsea play Watford, and actually, Matsari, when Kapoue scored for Watford, Matsari looked positively devastated. I prefer a manager who intentionally looks as miserable as they possibly can where their team scored actually quite a fine goal. This is David Louis on the Twitter, has said, "Given their history, how good could Matsari v Conte be on Saturday?"
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely some animosity between them, because there was a time when it was Mazzarri's Napoli and Conte's Juventus who were vying for the title, and there was at least one game, possibly several, where they didn't have a handshake before the game. They went straight to dugouts. And there was this whole story. There was a story that really got blown up in the Italian press that Mazzarri had accused Conte of copying his 3-5-2. Now, technically, the first time that Conte did use his 3-5-2 against Napoli was, at Juventus, was against Napoli. He did it specifically because Mazzarri had the 3-5-2, and it's a mirroring thing that happens semi-often, I'd say, in Serie A against teams playing a three-man defence, and isn't a terrible idea when you look at what happened with Spain this summer, and Xabi Alonso spoke to it very eloquently, why it's quite hard to play against a three-man defence unless you can mirror that shape to a certain extent. So
but you can't patent 3-5.
Exactly,
it's not like Dragon's
exactly.
Den, isn't it? I have patents pending in internationally for wing-backs.
Exactly, and Mazzarri had said some, had given some throwaway comments about it, and it was one of those things that the press sort of took around with it. Oh, he copied my formation. And actually, Mazzarri's quotes about it since have always been like, I think that was more of a media story. They did, you know, they did put each other's noses out of joint a little bit, but I think that that there's always been a sort of underlying element there of, well, it's certainly on Conte's part and on Juventus' part, they've I think openly acknowledged it a couple of times. It's the reason that we have this tension is because they're challenging us, because they're playing so well. So I don't think it's I'm trying to think of two managers who legitimately do hate each other now. I don't think it's one of the great managerial hatreds, but certainly it's got a little bit of backstory, which is interesting.
Maybe Mourinho and everyone else.
how do we see this game going on Saturday, Nick? Give Watford a chance. They had a good result at Southampton, didn't they?
Yeah, they still look a little bit sort of slightly incomplete. I think Simon Burton was saying last week that they've got some of the players they need for their new system, but haven't quite got the creative player in the middle there.
And one of their strikers, Isaac Success, is still not fit. Producer Ben and I were discussing our favourite names for footballers. I mean, he's up there, Isaac Success. He's no Yaya Banana. For me, we should talk about West Ham since we mentioned their game against Chelsea. They played Bournemouth on Super Sunday. It was an incredible 4-3 at Upton Park last season. Is anyone excited about West Ham at the Olympic Stadium in the Premier League, their show opener in this division? Obviously, they played a game in Europe there. Nick?
Yeah, well, West Ham seems to be building an entertaining team only of attacking midfielders, which is, you know, it's a way to approach it, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, they should be quite entertaining if nothing else. Perhaps at some point they'll sign a couple of defenders, but that's, you know,
they looked pretty hopeless against Chelsea. I was sort of surprised that they you know, Slaven Bilic had given them that sort of power and passion last season. They didn't seem to have that. And IU is breaking news, I'm told, out for 4 months.
Yeah. Oh, well, maybe they need another attacking midfielder.
No, I think that's a big blow for them, particularly given the amount of money that they spent on him and the goals he got for Swansea last year. But it was curious how Bilic set up against Chelsea, because it's like, what's the plan here? They seem to have two quite tricky and skillful players who can go past opponents, but they had Andy Carroll kind of in the box and he just was isolated. You know, you need to get crosses into him, and that wasn't going to happen. Maybe he acknowledged that, look, we're not going to have a lot of the ball, we need to be countering. But then maybe they need a different striker to Andy Carroll if that's going to be the case. They were linked with Bakker for much of the window, but that hasn't happened. Maybe it'll happen now that Ayew's got injured, but Bakker, he's a lot of money.
Are we worried for Bournemouth? Is anybody worried for Bournemouth? Nick, are you worried for Bournemouth?
I worry about lots of things. Worried? No, well, in terms of that they might get relegated.
I've just seen some pundits have been saying, oh, I think it's the tricky second season for Bournemouth.
No, well, I don't think so, but largely because there are going to be at least three worse teams than them. They've made a couple of decent signings, and then they'll have a couple of the signings they made last year fit, and then Benicophobia they'll have for the full season. So I'm not worried.
That's good. One less thing to worry about in life, which is marvellous.
Everyone in Bournemouth, relax.
Let's talk about Manchester City. They play Stoke. They hammered Steaua Bucharest 5-0 in the Champions League. Aguero got a hat-trick and missed two penalties. I asked producer Ben if this had ever happened before, and he said probably not, which is great research. But he has just got back from holiday, so we'll forgive him. And Joe Hart doesn't want to go to Sevilla, apparently, and Liverpool and Everton don't want him. Nick, you've been assigned to be our Joe Hart correspondent for the next 2 minutes, if that's a role you'd like.
2 minutes, my God. It's a strange one, because people react much more strongly when a goalkeeper gets dropped. I don't know, why is that? I mean, particularly Joe Hart. People seem to completely lose their minds about Joe Hart. This has happened a couple of times before. He was dropped in 2013 and also in 2014, although that was kind of billed more as him being rested. But it's not like this is Levi Ashin. He's a perfectly decent sort of Premier League goalkeeper who will go through dips of form. He showed in the summer that he has he's capable of some quite serious dips in form. And then, now that a new manager comes in, doesn't rate player, and everyone seems to have lost their minds completely.
James, have you lost your mind over Joe Hart ever?
I mean, Pep Guardiola should realise that he's Mezque on goalkeeper. You know, he's a Man City icon. You know, he's been there for 10 years. You know, he was picked up for what, 600 grand from Shrewsbury. He's been there through all the glory years of this club, and he's been kind of just, he's been stripped of everything now. And
could you make it more dramatic?
Well, also, like, Yaya Toure has been left out of the squad at the weekend, and then didn't travel either for the Steaua Bucharest game, even though Pep says he's been training superbly. But it is kind of reminiscent of when Pep got the Barcelona job and basically told Ronaldinho and Deco to get gone, and also try to get rid of Eto. Just get rid of these sort of big personalities who were perhaps coasting. Although I wouldn't necessarily say that about Joe Hart, even though he has made some blunders, particularly more recently at the Euros.
Isn't the question with Hart? And I definitely take what Nick's saying. Unlike with any other position on the pitch, we do make a big deal out of even resting a keeper, and I think that you could normally say, sure, he's not in the best of form. Willie Caballero is a perfectly decent replacement. Bring him in, let him have a few games off. But they're talking about bringing Claudio Bravo in, and isn't the issue here is more that it feels like actually what Pep's saying is, I'm not sure you play the ball with your feet as I'd like you to. You're not the keeper that I want for the way I play football, and therefore it's a bit more. It feels a bit more like, well, actually they are aiming to get him out and talking about sending him out on loan as well. I don't know. It seems much more than, yeah, okay, we're giving you a couple of games off. It feels like he's being ushered towards the exit.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. But it's just, I don't quite get the hysteria around him in particular. Guardiola, clearly rates Bravo a little higher than him. Although I was reading, apparently his first choice would be Andre Ter Stegen, so maybe just send someone out, find me a Barcelona goalkeeper. I don't care which one it is. Victor Valdez is signed for Middlesbrough, but yeah, who cares?
More bad news for Joe is that Jack Butland might be back in goal for Stoke. Is this the end of Joe's England career as well? I'm sorry, Joe, if you're listening to terrible day.
He's probably
for you.
Just shampooing his hair. It's fine. But what Sam Allardyce did say about Wayne Rooney, if he wasn't going to be playing at all, then he couldn't expect to be picked, even though he was captain. So I suppose the same rule applies to any player and Joe Hart as well.
People love minor celebrity news. He did once force me to drink a Jaeger bomb.
That's
probably the last one I've ever had. I didn't want it. I'm too old for that.
I think that might be the least surprising thing I've ever heard. What were the circumstances?
This was a charity golf thing that Steven Gerrard has. He has a foundation, yeah. And it's in Portugal. And then they have a sort of, the night before, there's a sort of beach bar thing.
Was Joe also having a Jaeger bomb?
Yes, he was. I think so. But this was, June, I think. And it wasn't an international, it wasn't before the Euros. No, so. You know.
How closely can we chart his career dip to this incident? That's what we're trying to work out.
I think, and they're not, they're bad. They're not as bad for you as a, they're pretty fattening, aren't they? In defence of Joe Hart.
I mean, Pep has banned pizza. I can't wait to hear his view on Jaeger bombs.
Stoke City, what do we think about Stoke this season, Paolo?
Same issues as lots of clubs again. I think certainly first game seemed like a decent amount of possession in useful areas, but lacking that last something to make things happen in the final third, which against Man City you worry is going to be an even bigger problem because they're not going to see as much of the ball, so they're not going to have time to dally around with it. But we saw last season they beat City, didn't they, last season?
Yes,
I think it was one of their good December. Wins.
2-0. Great goals from Arnautovic.
Yeah. So clearly they've changed the way they play in the last year or so. They've become more expansive. I think Shaqiri had a good opening game of the season as well. They've got some nice players there, but they're still. I don't know that I'm looking at Stoke and thinking, wow, that's a team that's going to gate crash the top group. I don't think I'm looking at them as a team that's going to be in trouble either. So they're somewhere in the middle again.
Again, they seem to be another one of those teams that could probably do with a centre forward. Mama Beiradus, I think he's quite underrated. But yeah, they could do with a striker. Yeah.
Been looking at Berahino, haven't they?
Yes,
but and they have, of course, got the Welsh Chevy, who we might get to see this weekend, Joe Allen. But Bojan comes up against Pep. His former mentor, who he's since said he wouldn't even go for a coffee with.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they had a bit of a falling out because apparently he was promised to play in that Champions League final in Rome against Manchester United, and he didn't, and he's never forgiven.
What about a Jaeger bomb?
I was waiting for that question.
I quite like that as a sort of as a sign that a relationship has deteriorated. That's quite a low level. Yeah. I'm not even going to go for a coffee. When Brian Clough and Peter Taylor fell out, Clough said if he saw Taylor by the side of the road, his car had broken down, he wouldn't stop to help him, he'd run him over. That's the level you want, not a kind of I wouldn't go for a coffee with him.
Do you want some more Champions League news while we're talking about Manchester City? Celtic beat Hapoel Beersheva 5-2. They need to avoid losing 3-0 in Israel next week to make it into the group stages. Dundalk lost 2-0 at home to Legia Warsaw, which is a great shame. It's all square between Porto and Roma. And Villarreal lost 2-1 at home to Monaco. Does anyone have anything to add about those bits of news? Paolo?
Well, I'm pretty sure me and James both watched the Roma game, which feels like a big one for Serie A, because Serie A has done pretty badly at getting its teams through the playoffs these last few years. Arsenal fans will remember Thomas Vermaelen, so were Barcelona fans more recently, and he managed to effectively turn the tie on its head, and not in a good way, because Roma had started brilliantly against Porto, and then he got himself sent off, and the next 60 minutes basically were Roma with their backs to the wall. So they were 1-0 up before he got sent off. They conceded early in the second half on a penalty and managed to cling on from there. But from Italian point of view, not a bad result, because they still get to go back to the Olimpico. Good news in Kevin Strootman playing well for his, well, it's not quite a comeback, because he was back at the end of last season, but he's been out the best part of the last 2 years, and obviously a fantastic player when he is there. So that was an interesting game, I thought. I don't know what you thought, James.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. But yeah, I mean, I suppose the Champions League news, everyone for years has been banging on about these coefficients, which are no longer going to matter anymore, because basically all the top leagues are going to have four places from 2018. So, so you know, the rich are going to keep on getting richer.
Oh, so you now no longer have to support your fellow sides because it doesn't make any difference.
But this is, I mean, it's not official yet, is it? This is coming in December.
Yeah.
And there's a really weird thing that's being floated around about teams think there should be a wild card based on historic merit.
Oh, yes, excellent. So Huddersfield from 1930. Nottingham Forest, there we are, Nick.
We all know who's who should be in there every year.
But we know what this really means. This doesn't mean actual historic merit like Nottingham Forest, which would be a little odd at this point in time, but nevertheless sort of charming. It means, oh, if Manchester United don't qualify one year, they're going to be in there anyway. So it's a bit of a, I don't know.
Outrage,
if it pans out that way, it feels a bit... Well, it feels more than a bit disappointing.
Unless the Corinthian casuals get in, I'm not having it.
Stade Reims, they're in the first couple of finals against Real Madrid, and now they're in the French fourth division or something like that.
Get them in, yeah. It's a bit sort of like, it'll become like Eurovision, won't it, basically?
Oh, gosh, Australia will have a team in soon.
They will. One more preview in part one. Manchester United v Southampton are the first Friday night football of the season. Are we happy that there'll be 10 games on a Friday night on your television in the Premier League?
Yeah.
Good. Next, happy. James, are you happy? Are you sad for away fans who will have to take a half day to travel from Southampton to Manchester?
Well, yes. I mean, it gets the weekend started a little bit earlier. I mean, it's very
sound
like a Heart
FM DJ. Yeah. Where literally, the only rule is to say how far away from the weekend you are, isn't it? Your weekend's getting started. It's Manchester United, Southampton.
Now, give us some Heart. Yeah.
We've had Friday games in the scruffy divisions for years, so it's, you know, by which I mean, sorry, the Football League.
No, absolutely right.
So, yeah, all for it.
So how do we... Manchester United, Southampton, Jose's first game, competitive home game.
Pogba's first game.
Pogba, will he come in for Fellaini?
Well, I don't know if he'll come in for Fellaini, because Fellaini did actually well. He was one of the best performers against Bournemouth. But Mourinho says he's ready because he's been kickboxing and doing all kinds of things on holiday, playing basketball against Romelu Lukaku. So he's fully match fit.
He had a cheeky Nando's with Jesse Lingard, which I think means he must be fully back acclimatised to English football, because he had his cheeky Nando's. I don't know if he's going to start. It seems like he's said he's ready to start, but whether or not that means he'll put him in. I do still, and it's going to... I mean, we're going to find out. We're going to find out more than just this weekend. But this question of where he fits in that formation is still intriguing to me, because Pogba is a brilliant footballer, but he wasn't brilliant always and wherever he was played at Juventus. He was most brilliant when he was allowed to be a mezzala, when he was allowed to be the half wing, which is basically a box-to-box role. It really lets him get up and down the pitch, use his legs, use his willingness to run a lot and to win challenges, as well as being that creative element who can sit on the edge of the box and flick a ball over the defence. So I don't know.
So you want to play him where Rooney is and then Herrera and Carrick?
He's not a number 10 either. Okay. Like, he's not, because if you put him there, then you lose the other element of it, which is that tracking back, the tackling, the being someone who's very physically important in the middle of the park. I don't see in the 4-2-3-1 where he fits, is my honest feeling on it. And maybe he will prove to me that he actually fits brilliantly there somewhere. But I think this was exactly the problem that Deschamps had with France, I think.
Good point. What about Mkhitaryan? Why is he not starting? Will he come in for Mata?
Well, I'm a little bit surprised, because Lingard got in ahead of him in the Community Shield and Mata against Bournemouth. I think Ilkay Gundogan, his former teammate at Dortmund and now a crosstown neighbour at Manchester City, said that he had a difficult sort of first year at Dortmund, sort of assimilating and taking, adapting to a new system, new country, new style of play. So perhaps that is a part of it. But, from what we can all gather about Mkhitaryan, he's one of the most intelligent footballers out there. So, yeah, I must say it's taken me a little bit aback, particularly given the amount of money that they've spent on him. But you have to say that Mata, for all the speculation about his relationship with Mourinho and whether they can coexist, particularly after he was substituted after coming on in the Community Shield, he was excellent against against Bournemouth. And you know, you have to say what a professional he is, because yeah, I thought he was their man of the match. A lot of people made the centre back Bailly the man of the match, but yeah, he scored the opening goal, unblocked that game. That was just chasing a lost cause, and then set up the second. Was involved in the second with a back heel. So yeah, Mata still matters for United.
Will maybe Mkhitaryan like be his place in the team not depend on Pogba, but be alongside Pogba, because if they United play a three-man midfield, they'll need not natural wingers, but Mkhitaryan is certainly a slightly more Mourinho-style player out wide than Mata or Rooney.
It's an interesting thought. So just to change the formation and have a different option. Yeah, that could work. Yeah.
Nick, just want to check on your worryometer, Southampton.
No, worried about Southampton.
Okay. Excellent. And speaking of big Friday nights in Manchester, there are now just 50 tickets for Football Weekly Live on the evening of Friday, the 2nd of September. Provided he comes back from Botswana, Jimbo will be there, along with Barry, if he ever comes back from Rio, and hopefully isn't dressed as he was when I spoke to him on the phone last week in an anorak, fleece and nothing on the bottom half, as well as John Ashdown and you as well, Paolo. Going to be there. It's all happening at the Northern Royal College of Music. It is part of the Manchester Football Writing Festival. Tickets are at the usual place, theguardian.com/guardianlive. That is the end of part one. We will begin part two with Mr. Shane Duffy.
This Guardian podcast is sponsored by Squarespace. To find out more about how to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/guardian.
Welcome back to Football Weekly Extra, part two. This is just after part one and just before part three. We got some tweets about what we should talk about. Tim C said, Shane Duffy, just talk about Shane Duffy for an hour. Greg wrote Shane Duffy and then Shane, full stop, Duffy. This is from Freeshoy, who said, would you rather be Shane Duffy last night or Donald Trump's assistant for life? Who would like to tell the Shane Duffy story? Nick Miller, would you like to do this?
Yeah, well, huge week for Shane Duffy. He the weekend he scored one own goal in Blackburn's 3-0 defeat to Wigan. Then perhaps because of the subsequent abuse he got for that, he deactivated his Twitter account. On Tuesday or Wednesday, he rejected a new contract offer from Blackburn, which he then celebrated on Wednesday night by scoring two more own goals and getting sent off. The two own goals he scored on Wednesday were absolute beauties. One was a sort of rifled finish into the bottom corner, and the other one was a bullet header. I can't recommend them highly enough.
So now after the first one, did he do the sort of the Paddy McNair, which is just sort of basically pretend it didn't happen, get up, walk back? Not even, he doesn't want anything, or did he punch the ground in rage?
He didn't really punch the ground in rage. He did. It was one of those where he tried desperately to salvage the situation, but he was sort of on his back, like when you put a tortoise on its shell. He was legs waving in the air, desperately trying to claw the ball out of goal. He was sort of sitting behind the line while doing this, desperately tried to kind of claw the ball away from goal, but to no avail.
Sad times for Shane, really.
Mm. Is he doing it on purpose?
He might be.
Do you think he'll do three next game? He's suspended, I suppose.
He wants out of this absolute horror show that is Blackburn. So,
well, the sending off was it was really unnecessary.
Oh yeah. He got sent off. There was a second booking for booting the ball at an opponent's arse. which was,
and it did go in the goal.
Didn't go in the goal.
So it hits a different target. Murray says, how many more games does Owen Coyle have left as Blackburn manager?
I'm astonished he's still there. I don't know why they possibly appointed him. In the summer, he was linked with Blackpool, which you sort of think, yeah, okay, that fits. So,
absolute horror show of a club with appointing Owen Cole, and then he rocked up at Blackburn.
But he did a good job at Bolton a while back, didn't he?
So what was that, sort of 10 years ago?
No, wait, maybe, I mean, maybe he's got it in his locker somewhere.
Is he still wearing shorts?
You know what? I'm not sure. And he's presumably devastated because the Football League actually doesn't have a... I don't think the Football League has an appointed sponsor this season, so he can't talk about the Sky Bet Championship.
I believe it is the Sky Bet.
Is it still the Sky Bet Championship?
I believe it is, yeah.
I thought...
Well, a great company. They are.
Okay.
Are we sponsored by...
I am personally sponsored by Sky Bet. That's a shame. He's very good at table tennis.
Is he? Yeah. Oh, is this another low-key celebrity anecdote? Was he on the golf tournament?
No, he wasn't. But interestingly, he came on Soccer AM back in the what I like to think of the glory years.
When you were presenting. The Lovejoy years.
the post-Lovejoy era of Soccer AM. And he was one of the very few footballers or football managers who actually asked you questions. Because they're so used to being interviewed that, you know, you sort of say to a footballer, are you going on holiday? And they go, yeah, I've got a place in Marbella. And you're just waiting. I mean, like, you don't really care. You're just making some small talk. Yeah. And he was interested, you know, asked if you had any hobbies and all these things. And then was very good at table tennis.
So is one of your hobbies table tennis? And that's
no,
you
not at all.
Playing?
At Bolton, they used to play. I think footballers play a lot of table tennis. It's just something that happens at football clubs. And he was the Bolton champion against all the young pros. Devilish spin on his really? Serve. Producer Ben says, carry on. Don't know why.
And this is gold. This is absolute gold.
The thing was, I didn't get enough abuse below the line on Monday, right? It was all frightfully positive, and I don't like that. So hopefully I'll get some abuse now. Rafa V. Stam in the Championship Champions League winners derby, not including Roberto Di Matteo. Newcastle beat Reading, which was a much-needed victory.
Yeah, first win of the season. By all accounts, they looked sort of quite impressive. Dwight Gale. Got a couple. Matt Ritchie scored a penalty, and they look like they're sort of gelling together now a little bit more.
Interesting statistic that Bolton are the only team in the Football League with a 100% record. Tommy asks, Bolton have won 3 games in a row. Is this what hope feels like? It's quite interesting that normally 3 games in there are two or three sides in each division that have done it. What does this tell us? Does it tell us anything?
It's a long season.
Should we go back to the Premier League? Burnley versus Liverpool. Sadio Mane might be out for a while, actually. Sturridge and Milner are back. How impressed with Liverpool were you, Paolo?
It was very sort of, as with both teams, like a very uneven performance. They started quite badly. And when they got in at half-time 1-1, were probably feeling a little bit... lucky to have done so, but obviously the beginning of the second half they're absolutely scintillating. The goals were fantastic, and I don't know, you sort of feel a bit like they played brilliant football for half an hour in between an hour of definitely some big question marks still about the defence, very obviously some question marks about the left back position, which feels like you could spin that all the way back to Julian Dix and that would still be true. And I think there's definitely some concerns there about that, but when they were going forward, they were electric. I think that it's a shame that Mane's injured. I heard actually that maybe isn't as bad as they initially thought it was, but I think the pace, which is exactly what a lot of people question that transfer, thought Liverpool spent a lot of money, but I think that the one thing again, another team with a lot of players who play behind the attack and are very productive, one thing that group was missing was just that sheer speed, and on the fourth goal he really showed it. So I think there's clearly plenty to be encouraged about. This clearly looks more like a team in Klopp's image, which is what we've been waiting for, but I don't know. They should never have let Arsenal back into the game at 4-1. And generally, they didn't defend very well.
Back to how worried you are about things, Burnley.
Quite worried about Burnley. Yeah, they've managed to sign a player this week, Stephen Defoe.
What do we know about Stephen Defoe?
Well, Defoe, he once received a letter from Sir Alex Ferguson.
Okay.
Because Fergie was keen on signing him, and then he did his knee. And Fergie didn't wait for him like he waited for Ruud van Nistelrooy. But perhaps the most famous thing about Defoe is he swapped Standard Liège for Anderlecht. And the Standard fans did not forget this. And when he went back, they had one of the most memorable banners of a guy in a white mask basically holding a severed head, which was Stephen Defoe's head.
Wow.
So, yeah, but... Yeah, I suppose he comes in and replaces Joey Barton.
That's a very northern way of saying Defoe as well.
Yeah. Defoe.
Liverpool have got Jonathan Woodgate as a Spanish and Portuguese scout. Did this turn your head, Nick?
He'll probably be scouting Shane Duffy, I imagine, given his debut for Real Madrid. That was a classic.
Should we go to Leicester-Arsenal? 5:30 kickoff. Hull proved how you should play against Leicester and how teams should have played against Leicester for most of last season, didn't they?
They did. I think plenty of teams did try and play against Leicester last season. I don't want to start suggesting that Leicester have been, even if they have been found out, I think we can say that they cope with some of that last season. I don't think if there was a lesson there to be learned that Arsenal will learn it, because there's nothing in Arsene Wenger's back catalogue to suggest that he's a man who adjusts his approach, and certainly not to an approach that would say, all right, we'll sit back and let you have the ball. So I think it'll be another open game. Obviously, Arsenal were the one team that did beat Leicester twice last season, so not necessarily the team that Leicester would most like to see right now, having
smashed them at Leicester, didn't they?
It was a fairly topsy-turvy game, but yes, it was a good win for Arsenal. I wouldn't expect a repeat of the whole match, certainly. Even the whole match, you could say that if Vardy had scored early, then it might have gone differently, but I think we're definitely going to get a different game this weekend.
I think you don't say Leicester were unlucky, but if you played that game another 100 times, they'd probably win it. You know, 99, because they had so many sort of good chances that were saved by, you know, excellent blocks or saves, and I think so.
And Mara's signed a new contract.
Yes, there was an excellent, people were familiar with Arsenal fan TV. They went on the road.
There's a two-stop shouty men.
Yeah, one, I'm not sure which one of the shouty men it was, but they went up to Leicester, looked at those, you know, those big pictures they have around the side of the grounds with the bit star players, and they spent a long time filming one of these things that didn't have Riyad Mahrez on it, and he was all kind of, no Riyad Mahrez on there. That's strange, isn't it? Do you think that's because he's going to Arsenal? And then, of course, Riyad Mahrez signs a new contract yesterday. So, I walked past the word. Sorry,
that's fine.
Sorry, I walked past the little cluster of people outside the Arsenal Liverpool game last week. It's an incredible thing that Arsenal fan TV. I don't understand what people get out
well,
of it.
So as an Arsenal fan,
yeah. Are you on it, Paolo?
As a season ticket holder, I believe it exists only for the pleasure of fans of other teams. Yeah. It exists purely so that fans of other teams can make fun of Arsenal fans. I don't know Arsenal fans who watch Arsenal fan TV for pleasure. Mm. I think it's a thing that many of us avoid, and some people maybe relish the pain somehow of watching this and getting angry about it, but I don't think that really in the large Arsenal fan TV is even for Arsenal fans. I think it's for everyone else. That's my feeling about it.
Yes, it'd be particularly grim to think that was a representative of Arsenal fans.
Is Paolo Baldini? Are you refusing to go on? Is this a boycott of Arsenal fans?
I've never been asked on, but I don't think I would say yes. No, I'm pretty sure I will be asked now. Pretty certain I won't be asked. I'm pretty okay with not being asked, actually.
Why not? You could change. You know, it's good to, you know. The question is: do you complain from outside, or do you go within and change?
I'm much more of a just bury your head in the dirt and pretend this thing doesn't exist kind of approach.
Oh, okay. Spurs versus Crystal Palace. Hugo Lloris out for a month. How big a blow is this? Because Michel Vorm, although played very well actually when he came, or made one important save against Everton, looks a bit nervy whenever he comes in place for Hugo Lloris. Because he doesn't do it very often. And actually, he's a very good goalkeeper, isn't he?
Yeah, I thought he was brilliant at Swansea. And I think a lot of people were surprised that he went to Spurs and was willing to be the number two. At the time, many people read a lot into that and thought it meant Lloris was going to be moving on. But clearly not. I don't think it perhaps makes too much of a change, even though we have made out how... Now dropping Joe Hart is such a seismic decision. I think Spurs will be okay. I mean, I've been really excited by Lamella. I think Lamella's been brilliant through pre-season, obviously scored again at the weekend, ended last season well. And seems to be really coming good for them. You know, after first couple of years where a lot was made of his price tag, and he seems to be settled, adjusting, in a big part of that Pochettino team.
Do you see Pochettino starting Janssen either instead of Kane or dropping, because he took Dyer off and brought Janssen on and changed the game at Everton, or do you think he'll stick with what worked for them last season?
Well, initially, certainly he'll stick with what worked for them last season. Janssen will be someone to come in and give Kane a bit of a rest in, you know, cup games or whatever, and to change the game if it needs changing. But yes, I assume he'll stick with what worked for the majority of last season.
Paolo, how do you feel about the Yannick Bolasie transfer?
Indifferent.
Are you not sort of shocked and angered at the amount of money? Or, well, that's just life these days.
Well, again, I mean, the market is where it is, and certainly for the Premier League, and this is what happens when everyone sees you get a big TV deal, everyone in the world raises prices, and so it happens across the board. Every transfer goes up in price just accordingly. I think Palace fans are more wound up about Jedinak, aren't they?
Going to Villa, yeah.
Yeah, because it's not a lot of money. He did start at the weekend and would have been a part of the team, and he's someone who's sort of very integral to who they are and feels like he's been part of them getting to where they are right now. But obviously, it seems like they're trying to raise funds for Benteke.
That's it for part two. In part three, the rest of the Premier League, Italy and Spain. Welcome back to part three. Producer Ben has said it's going quite long. Let's get a shift on. We'll start in Italy. Paolo and James, would you like just to have like a 5-minute discussion on what's going to happen in Italy? Nick, you can join in if you like.
I'm just going to kick back. Okay, fine. Listen to this.
What are you most excited about, James?
I'm excited to see if this Juventus team can win the Champions League, I suppose. So I'm looking beyond Serie A, because I think a lot of people think that the other teams have got little or no chance. Mm. Which, you know, in sport, as Juventus' coach Max Allegri said, and a lot of the others have, a lot of the teams competing for that title have said, you know, anything can happen. And the problem is that Juventus have made everybody in Italy look like Leicester. Mm. In that, if anyone other than Juventus wins the title, it will be a fairy tale, a miracle. But I think the signings they've made are, I mean, there's been a lot of focus on Higuain and Pjanic, but I think Dani Alves it follows in the tradition of great free transfers. And Marco Piazza, there was a lot of excitement about him at the Euro. So I think they're really great.
Well, I think that the Higuain thing continues to baffle me even now. The price is the price, and I find that a bit mad, but it is what it is. What really baffles me about it is they're even talking now. He's obviously showed up a little bit overweight, and there's questions about is he up to speed with everything. But they're talking about he might not start in the opening weekend. So 90 million on a striker, and they're looking at it and going, well, Paolo Dybala and Mario Mandzukic is actually quite a good partnership, so maybe we won't mess with that. He's a player who's played his best years, his best football in a 4-3-3 at the middle of it, which to do which you'd have to, I don't know, move Dybala out wide, which is bonkers because he's coming off an amazing season. And it's just, I get it from the point of view of stripping down your rivals and making yourself untouchable, but it is it's a fascinating question to see what happens with Higuain, because I have a feeling that Juventus could possibly romp to the title and that could still prove to be a terrible transfer. So it's both of those things aren't mutually exclusive. Beyond Juventus, I'm interested to see Inter and Frank de Boer. We can let you back in at some point, Max, if you want.
No, just carry on. Nick, you're right. Yeah, yeah, great, carry on.
I don't know. I think de Boer is probably the one I'm most interested in at Inter, because that team, when you look at it top to bottom,
it's decent.
It's arguably better stacked than either Napoli or Roma at this point. Do you think they were first at Christmas? They're bringing in Juan Mario. I think Banega was one of the, again, great free transfer signings of this summer. And that midfield, if Kondogbia kicks on like he's supposed to, if Kandreva comes in and has an impact, that's a stacked midfield. That's a really compelling, good midfield with Icardi, who, while I don't think he's a 70 million euro player, certainly can score goals from you up front. There's the makings of a challenger there. But De Boer himself said in an interview the other day, he thinks it'll take him 4 months before you get to see his version of this team. So a little while yet, I guess.
Yeah, that's the problem when you sack your manager 2 weeks before the start of the season.
Is there an underdog?
Well, everyone is an underdog, I suppose.
Quick on that, Why is that? It's just Juventus have just got bucket loads more money than everyone else?
Well, if you look at what happened last year, that was seen as the best opportunity that any other team was going to have for a long time to basically beat Juventus to the title, because they lost Pirlo, Tevez and Vidal, and then they made their worst start to the season in, you know, almost, I think, a century, and didn't really start to kick on until the beginning of November. And they still won the title. They went on this record-breaking streak of 15 straight wins. Buffon went without conceding for the longest time ever. It was the comeback of ages. And once they'd come through that transition, you looked at what they could do this season and who they brought in, even before selling Pogba. And it does look now that that team is, you know, as Allegri said, yeah, Pogba has to think carefully before leaving this club, because they're probably now one of the top four in Europe with Bayern, Barcelona and Real Madrid. And I don't think that is an exaggeration when you look at the squad.
Well, you look at you're saying about the other transfers that aren't the obvious ones. And I apologies if you did say his name, but he's almost one of the forgotten ones. And it's amazing because 2 years ago, he was one of Roma's very best players, Mehdi Benatia. You think that's someone who was one of your direct rivals' very best players, just sort of coming in as an extra little throwaway who probably won't necessarily be in your best 11 because you've got three great central defenders already. The depth is mind-boggling at Juventus, and they may yet add more players before the end of the summer. So it's very hard to see someone else winning it. I think Roma could be good again this season, even if Pjanic goes with Strootman coming in. I think that I really like Spalletti and the job he's doing there, although I am worried, and again, it was an issue against Porto with the lack of a just goal scorer, because Edin Dzeko, another missed open goal, and you think about the Real Madrid games last season where they could have actually got something out of them if they had some finishing. But in the end, the depth is just so much greater at Juventus now. And it is, I mean, you asked, to get back to your very original question, Mac, to ask about money, having that stadium, having a commercial team who have done an exceptional job in increasing the revenues, it is to an extent about money. Yes, they've done a better job than anyone else in Serie A of making themselves the global brand in the league.
Brilliant. I enjoyed that tremendously. Can you do the same with Spain? We rang Sid, but he didn't answer his phone. So we'll talk about Spain. Barca won the Super Cup last night. Turan scored twice, Messi once, as they won the second leg 3-0 to win 5-0 on aggregate. It's a three-horse race, do we think, La Liga?
Yeah, I imagine so. I mean, it's been quite interesting to see some of the moves that Barcelona and Real Madrid have made. They've been quite understated by their standards, in that they've bought players, none of whom you could really call a Galactico. I think Barca have kind of padded out their squad with Umtiti and Andrew Gomez, and they brought back some players that they sold a few years ago. And Real, all they've done is bring in Morata. They brought him back from Juventus, which I think is an interesting one, because I think he will actually get a lot more game time than people think, even with that Benzema, Bale and Cristiano Ronaldo front three, because he's just so versatile. It's curious. I think the Premier League and the money that has been going around in the Premier League has had a real effect on them.
I was chatting, interviewing Calderon, is it Roman Calderon?
Yeah.
About Pogba, and he was saying Real were definitely in for Pogba, and they really wanted him, and they were almost sort of taken aback. You know, I'm not sure why they would be, but you know, almost. And Gary Lineker was saying this is a watershed moment, really, for La Liga and the Premier League to see this shift. Do you see it like that?
I don't know. Time will tell if it's a watershed moment. I do think that every Premier League TV deal seems to ramp it up to a notch that is faster than anyone else in Europe is keeping up with. It is doing that, and money has that. Money has that effect. Money will be able to make and break these deals. It was definitely a kick in the stomach for Real Madrid this summer, and I'd heard the same thing, that they were very seriously interested in Pogba, and I think Pogba, frankly, at the beginning was very seriously interested in them, because he was talking about wanting to play with Zidane. So there was a real sense, I think, in Madrid that he should have gone there, that was what was supposed to happen. It's jarring when you're Real Madrid and you've always been able to do these deals to not be able to get it done in that circumstance. But whether it's the new world order, I'll hold off on for a little while, but certainly the financial strength is only ever more with the Premier League, and it doesn't seem like that's going to get less. That seems like that's only going to get more in the years ahead.
I suppose when you have to pay £20 million to the agent of Paul Pogba, who has now seems to have gone and spent it on Al Capone's villa in Miami. maybe that put them off.
Let's look at the rest of the Premier League. Swansea Hull. James, I didn't give Hull enough credit on Monday.
Did you not?
I got told off by a Hull fan on social media saying our greatest result for centuries and you barely mention it.
Yeah.
Mike. You've ruined my life, etc.
I suppose Mike Feely made a case for him to be made permanent manager. It's amazing what you can do when the odds are stacked against you because... Yeah, everyone said, look, the adversity at Hull galvanised the team and was in part to explains that performance. But he made some interesting decisions, in part that he had to because he had so many injuries, but playing Livermore in defence, occasionally Musa had the better of him getting past him, but it's quite interesting to see someone at Hull be able to ping the ball out from the back quite accurately. And then Klukas, who usually plays on the left and was the man of the match in midfield. Phelan made some interesting choices, which I think he deserves a lot of credit for.
He also said the team, it was made a big thing out of the team having a good night's sleep before the game.
Yes. So,
there you go. Make sure your players are well rested and they'll beat the champions.
But you know, that had Pep said that, the newspapers would have gone wild with tactical genius, wouldn't they? West Brom versus Everton, gentlemen. How do we see this going, Paolo?
Well, Everton felt like they slightly got away with one against Tottenham in terms of the performance, but I think they still clearly have the potential to score goals. We're still finding out how this team is going to play. I think it's one of those games that will be interesting to keep an eye on, but I don't have a strong view on how it's going to finish up.
I'm quite interested in West Brom's persistent attempts to sign Jeffrey Schlupp, because Tony Pulis is famously a man very suspicious of fullbacks of any description, and now apparently they've had 4 bids rejected. Leicester have said they're not selling him, and yet still they keep going for him. So
perhaps Tony's changed.
Maybe he has. Maybe he has. It's proof that we can all change.
Maybe he'll be in a suit on Saturday if he gets Schlupp
sitting down for press conference.
Absolutely. Sunderland Borough, Sunday 1:30, Tyne Wear Derby. James.
Yeah, I'm still thrilled by Borough, you know, and they've really gone for it in the transfer market, and I thought they were rewarded. We saw Negredo get his first goal. But Sunderland certainly coped better against City than Steaua Bucharest. Considering the number of new signings who had literally been brought to Sunderland within 48 hours of that game, either starting or coming on and having an impact, that was positive from I suppose Moyes' point of view. But you know, they're still without a win in August in 6 years. Could this be the time?
Quickly, the MLS, a huge weekend of games, gentlemen, if you're interested or not. NYCFC host LA Galaxy, Lampard versus Gerrard, Ashley Cole and Robbie Keane as well. New York, atop of the Eastern Conference, Franco scored 4 in 3, despite being apparently one of the worst MLS signings ever. And a big derby between Seattle Sounders and Portland Timbers. Portland have got Stephen Taylor in the summer. They also have son of Nick, Jack Barmby. Which is a sign of quite how old we all are. And Liam Ridgewell. And they won it last time as well. Clint Dempsey, Tyrone Mears, and Hercules Gomez playing for Seattle. Does anyone want to talk about the Olympics just before we finish?
You were saying about Jack Barmby coming in. Should have mentioned this in our Serie A preview. But one of the signings that Fiorentina have made this year is Yanis Hadji, who's Georgie Hadji's son. He will be playing with Federico Chiesa, if you remember Enrico Chiesa. His son is at Fiorentina as well. And I think Roma have got Luca Marchegiani's and Angelo Di Livio's sons in their team as well. So the next generation coming through, just waiting for the Maldinis to emerge.
And who will be the next Jordi Cruyff?
Yes.
From them. Yeah. Tim says, has it really become too difficult to compete in the Premier League and Europe at the same time? Or has the significant increase in Premier League revenue reduced the importance of Europe for Premier League clubs?
It demonstrably has. more of their money comes from domestic sources. So yes, it has reduced the influence. Doesn't mean there's no influence, but it's reduced it.
And finally, Adam says, which player is your spirit footballer, the embodiment of your very essence?
I've got Mickey Quinn here. Out of shape, but occasional flashes of talent.
James? The team I play for said I was Grant Holt.
I've been liking, five aside, I've been liking to Gattuso, because I've got very little about me. I just snap at people's heels, you know.
I think the most accurate this week would probably be Shane Duffy.
Okay, good. Thanks, chaps. Did you have a nice time?
Lovely time.
It's wonderful, Max.
Yeah, it was lovely.
Hope we can do this again sometime.
Well, I think James doesn't land, sadly for listeners, gets back from Botswana at sort of midday on Monday. So unless that flight is remarkably early, it'll be me again. Jonathan Wilson will be here, amongst others. Thanks for listening. I look forward to reading your comments.